This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
All right, everybody, we're back with John Aronson. He is a licensed general contractor and manufactured home contractor, as well as a licensed real estate broker and manufactured home dealer. We are continuing the conversation around accessory dwelling unit. And one of the things I forgot to bring up the last show with which is the most exciting, is some people only think this is for single family residences, but it's not. It's from 1 to 4. So if you have a fourplex, you can build an ADU on your property. So have you seen a lot of people understand that and actually take advantage of that, John?
You know, to be honest with you, I have not had one person, call me or address a multiplex home.
I've had a few conversations, but they were always surprised. They did not know that according to the new regulation, they could do that. Now,
it is permissible, that's for sure.
So we ended talking about the appraisal piece. So I have heard flippers having some challenges and concerns about the ADUs, and I think that is a risk. I think I get more excited about real estate investors who are looking to add an ADU. The problem is that I think this is going to be regulated more because of the short-term rental conversation. So I've seen cities start to regulate it, saying it has to be an owner occupied property to do the ADU and rent out the unit. You can't be a non-owner occupant and rent out both. Does that seem to be a trend that you're seeing?
It is. And you are right. It's jurisdiction by jurisdiction. Some local jurisdictions don't have a problem with a property owner not being on the property. They can rent out both units. Others do. And then, as you hit on earlier, the short-term rental thing is really a huge issue with most jurisdictions. They do not want Airbnbs or VRBO type activity in a lot of these neighborhoods. And I can absolutely agree with that.
What are the cities who have outright banned the short-term rental or made the owner-occupied covenant you have to live there to be able to do it?
Yeah, there are. There's both. They lean more towards having to live on the property in order to be able to rent one out than not. Mm-hmm. I only know of a handful of cities where that's not necessarily mandated.
And that's a real bummer. I've had investors do this. They go into a market like Palm Springs and don't know the licensing regulations. And I think in several markets have limits on how many weeks out of the year or contracts you can have. It really messes with your numbers. So if you're buying a property thinking this is just going to be a sure shot and you're basing it on the rental income you're going to get from a short-term rental, that's a bummer. So don't do that.
You're absolutely right. And I think you really need to do your homework there. I mean, you got to find out what jurisdictions are, as they put it, TOT friendly. Transient occupancy tax, mm-hmm. You know, the ones that really are looking for that added formula, you know, that there are cities, one as an example is the city of Oceanside. They love and embrace, TOT investment type properties. However, they have certain areas like the downtown Pier District, you know, things like that, where they favor it, where they don't favor it, and where they tend to lean more towards having to be an occupant on the property and not allowing less than 30-day rentals is in more of your residential communities. Mm-hmm. But in the downtown, more urban-type setting, they embrace it.
Okay.
But you just have to know which is which.
Yeah, and you can't assume, like I worked a lot with the state on this chapter, and we created this big, huge list of all the development departments. I think there was over 400, and a very large portion of them had zero ordinances. Their websites were terrible, but HUD did not have the most up-to-date information, and it makes sense because a lot of the cities are still working on their ordinances around this. So you really have to go to the development department and specifically ask, and in my opinion, you should get it by email. So If just because they send you a specific thing doesn't mean there's not something else on the city council's agenda or the development department, or some cities have the, what's it, the I'm trying to think of, the city of Riverside has it. They have like a committee that looks at everything before it's approved, but a lot of this stuff could be in process, and you want to make sure you're talking to the person who actually knows what's happening and what you're talking about. Because I hate to see people get hosed.
Phone call. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've made a phone call to a local ordinance on a specific point, gotten down to the permit counter, and it was totally contradictory.
Yep. I mean, is there any way to fight that? Do you show them the email, like, hey, you sent me this, and can I still get it through, or what do you do?
Well, that's the issue. You don't always get that email, and you stress the point, get that email.
Yep.
That's important. Then you can show something in writing and say, look, I spent time emailing and phoning these folks, and this is our communication. And then that kind of brings a person a little bit more acquiescent.
One of the interesting things, the conversation with Senator Wachowski, was they seem very irritated that the cities keep on layering on fees and trying to figure out ways to make money off of this. But it got to the point where it almost seemed to suggest that now tiny homes and RVs are not Title 24 or 25. It's under the DMV. But he didn't seem opposed under new regulation coming up to consider those things, that his whole point is just, we need affordable housing units. Do you see that really becoming a thing, or what's happening next?
I have never understood why park models have not been acceptable. I mean, they're built, again, the same way a manufactured home is built. They're a little lighter. I mean, they don't use the 2x6 walls. They use 2x4 and then 2x3 interior. But there's no reason why they couldn't go larger by special request. I don't see any reason at all why they don't allow tiny homes. Well, I can understand tiny homes in and of itself. Apart from park models, tiny homes are not regulated. Anybody can build a tiny home in their backyard. They're not following any particular code. The recreation vehicle goes under REVA, the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association, RVIA, and they are regulated by DMV. A lot of tiny home there is no tiny home manufacturer per se. If there were, then they would be park model manufacturers. But a tiny home, by definition, as far as I understand it, is just a kind of a backyard hobbyist that wants to build a little place to live in. But they're not. You can't get them permitted. And in some instances, if code enforcement wants to red tag them and make you remove them, they have every right to do so.
Well, and what's frustrating, because the JADU sort of, it's smaller, and I mean the tiny homes meet the definition by health and safety code as far as providing permanent provisions for living, sleeping, eating, cooking, and sanitation. So do you think the state is so desperate for inventory that they might end up pushing that through as being the state coming down and telling the cities, you have to permit this?
I hope so. I would love to see that, because park models in and of themselves are really, I mean, I've dealt with them. They're not, you can't tell them apart. I own a HUD manufactured 12x36 ADU, and it's in a mobile home park, and it sits right next to a park model that's a 12x36. You can't tell them apart by looking at them. And I see no reason why they shouldn't be allowed. I understand why they don't allow tiny homes, because if you don't know how they're built, and they don't get permits for them, and they just show up in somebody's backyard without any regulation, then I can understand that.
Maybe I don't
it's
know.
Like building a,
what's a park model?
Forming structure.
Maybe I don't. I'm sorry? I don't know what a park model is then.
A park model is like a mini. It looks just like a manufactured home.
Okay.
You can't tell it apart from a single wide manufactured home.
Oh.
I can send you some pictures.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I'll post it on the blog.
I'll send you a picture of the one I was just referring to.
Okay. And it's built to the same code, maybe a little bit lighter, but it's built to the same code as HUD would require for a manufactured home?
Probably not entirely. They'd probably have to make some alterations if they were to, you know, allow park models to be installed on a residential property. I'm sure that they would have to jump through a few hoops with HUD and make them more HUD compliant as opposed to RVIA compliant.
And
the plumbing and electrical standards and things like that don't always apply to park models as do manufactured.
And RBIA stands for?
I'm sorry?
RBIA stands for?
Recreation Vehicle Industry Association.
Got it. Okay. So one of the reasons we're spending so much time on the manufactured housings piece is that I don't think a lot of people also realize that they count as part of this regulation. So you don't have to stick built anything. So you have a stick built in the front, maybe you have a rental, you can get a manufactured house and put it in the back and it counts. And there's nothing cities at this point can really do about that, correct?
That's right. There's no legislation. I think back in the 80s, they basically made it a federal law that you can't show any discrimination against manufactured or factory-built housing or prefab, for that matter.
Right, and so you that's know, a lot of faster.
It's all legal as long as it's permitted properly, inspected properly, and signed off.
And that's at the state level. So you can order one of these and it's because it's approved at the state level. There should be no reason or issue with the local jurisdiction as far as getting it through the permitting process or anything because it's done at the state level, right?
That's right. And the only, probably the only other thing that would be an impediment to manufacture home or any kind of an ADU for that matter is with an HOA or if there's a development that has CC&Rs that prohibit, ADUs. And there are, the state government or the federal government, both they don't have any jurisdiction over a private entity. And an HOA by definition is a private entity.
Got
under
it.
Themselves. They're allowed to regulate themselves. They're allowed to eliminate or prohibit certain things. And so the state doesn't really have much traction there.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm part of several HOAs, but one of my HOAs is, of course, financially not doing as well as it could be. And there's some extra land. So I actually pitched to them the idea of building some new homes. I hadn't thought about the manufactured home piece. I don't think that would be well received, but oddly where I got stuck is I contacted the city. I'm like, who do I talk to about using some of the public spaces that are very large and now not green friendly because it's just grass that nobody uses. Can we build something there? And the city, the response has been strange. They're like, we don't know. You need to go to the state. I'm like, but you handle zoning. Why? I don't know. I have some more work to do on that. So, yeah. HOAs, that's a whole dozen.
This was in an HOA?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think there's room for six more houses. And if the community built it and sold them, we could do everything we want to do in the community, bring it back into the black and be fully upgraded. But I have to figure out a way to get there. It's a side project just because I have nothing else to do.
Well, you know, on that subject, though, one of the main reasons that HOAs are so tight-fisted about their policies, especially with reference to manufactured housing, is because they all look at it as wobbly boxes, as trailers. You know, they think that they're going to be an eyesore to the community, but what they don't realize is that a manufactured or modular can be built to the same standards as what's existing on the property. So if you have a stucco-sided home with a red tile 512 pitch, you can have a manufactured or a modular component built to those same standards. You could have them shipped and delivered, stucco-ready to the property, and tile-ready. You don't ship them out with tile and stucco already on them. Mm-hmm. Because of the added weight and the damage potential to the both the roof tiles and the stucco, there'd be a lot of cracking and breakage involved. So that's something that is done on site. But you can build them that way. You can still factory build the component itself, just do the finish work on site.
Well, let's talk about timeframes right now, because I know they're more popular. There's sort of a lack of skilled labor these days, sort of on both sides of the aisle. So you've seen both. So stick-built versus manufactured home at this point. From start to finish, what are the timeframes to get a project complete?
Well, your manufactured in an ideal world, okay, now, I'll take the city of Encinitas as an example. They're probably the most progressive jurisdiction, I think, that I know of in the state of California. They just waived about $3,000 in entitlement fees, developmental and environmental impact fees, stuff like that. And they've got the cost of a permit down pretty darn low. I mean, you'd probably go in for about $5,000 and pull a permit for an ADU. Another thing they did that I helped them with a little bit was develop what they call an RFP, a request for proposal from architects in the area to come up with different types of floor plans and elevations that they could approve that met all their requirements, and that an individual, a resident of property or a homeowner, could go to the counter and say, I want to go through your pre-approved plans, and I want to be able to draw from those, and I'll pay my permit. And they could literally walk out with the permit, basically what they call a counter permit, within a couple of hours.
Wow. That's pretty neat.
I know it. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm amazed. I heard that the city of San Diego is looking at the same type of an approach. And if you could get more jurisdictions doing that, then theoretically, and here's the answer to your question, the time it takes to go through that permit process, which can be anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, is about the same time frame it takes to build an ADU on an assembly line. Hmm. So in a perfect world, you could come out at the end of 4 to 6 weeks, turnkey, and have a CO for your ADU.
Wow. So certificate of occupancy for a manufactured home ADU, correct?
Correct. Not a modular. Modular, there's a few additional steps involved, like the foundation and all that. But ADU, manufactured HUD, you could do it in the same time frame.
Well, let's talk real world now. what's the realistic time frame in most cities that you're seeing?
Okay, if you're dealing like in the county of San Diego, at least, I'm going to the county tomorrow, so maybe what I'm saying today may not apply tomorrow, but if there is much of a difference, I'll certainly get back to you and let you know.
Okay.
But the biggest stickler is the county of San Diego. They take the longest. And it could be anywhere from as little as 3 to as much as a year.
A year?
To a year.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's they're all over the place. The county is the most difficult. I hope they hear me. I hope you send them a copy of this. they're probably the most difficult jurisdiction in the county to deal with for a variety of reasons. And you still walk out of there. At the end of the day, when they get through jostling you around all the various departments and the fire department and this department and that department, you're still going to be spending about $8,000 to $12,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the permit. But you know, that's the good news. The bad news, the county used to charge up to $40,000.
Oh, my gosh.
For an ADU permit. Yeah. It's crazy.
And that was exactly what was not supposed to be the case, and why the state keeps regulating this, because they're trying to grease the wheel, because that's not affordable when you start adding those kind of fees.
And it stifles 90% of the people. I can't tell you how many people, we've been in this business 32 years. ADUs are not new to us. They're new on the home. They're new on the public front, you know, for the most part. But for us, we've been doing them forever. And the biggest thing that stifled most people, we've lost most deals on ADUs because of the front-end costs and the time involved and the complications and all the minutiae you had to wade through.
Well, I've been telling investors to send me case studies, and I've been sending along to the state as they've asked for case studies of things not working. So I've been really surprised how open the state is to receiving feedback.
Well, I tell you, the state, I love them dearly for what they're doing, and I've worked with Greg Nicholas extensively on this for the last 2 to 3 years. I've hosted both he and Senator Lykowski down for conferences and workshops, and and so forth. And they're very, very in the trenches with this, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they've even said that they, you know, if they give the jurisdictions 120 days to comply or issue a permit, or they automatically get issued. Well, I still haven't been able to get an answer from the state. Who's going to issue the permit? Is that permit coming from you, the state? Is it going to be an HCD permit? Mm. Or is it going to have to be, how do you force the jurisdiction to issue the permit? And I still haven't been able to get a definitive answer on that. And other than the fact that Greg did, and Nicholas did tell me, oh, well, you can't. You can lead the horse to the water, but you can't make him drink it.
It's interesting. It's a stick, but nobody...
it's a stick, but no carrot.
Right. And so the law basically says that the city can't produce the permit in a certain amount of time. It defaults to the state, and it's considered approved. But you're saying you still need a permit, and you're not sure who's going to give it to you. Interesting.
Yeah. Who's going to be responsible? Now, we deal with the state, I mean, all the time, because we deal in a lot of manufactured home developments, you know, like park developments. Mm. And we do a lot of private lot or parcel type work as well. So we're always dealing with the state. And the state, by comparison, for the most part, is much easier to get along with than a lot of your local jurisdictions. Because they have a standard operating procedure down for manufactured. But they don't get involved with modular because that's up to the local jurisdictions. And they've never gotten involved with site build because that's under their purview. Mm-hmm. So how, then, if somebody wants to build a site build or a modular ADU on their property and they're stifled for in excess of that 120-day window, how does the state then force them to issue a permit? And I still haven't gotten an answer on that. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of stuff out there. There are a lot of dangling participles, if you will.
For sure. Well, when you find out, you let me know, and I'm fighting the fight on this as well and communicating with different counties. I'm actually hopefully interviewing Riverside County, unincorporated Riverside County, their economic development director, and this is one of the things I want to talk to them about. Because San Diego is very different than the, you know, Riverside County. The price point is a lot lower, so the strategies may be a little different out here. I've got investors that are taking free and clear rentals. They're doing hard money, and they're taking it out on the primary structure to be able to build an ADU. And I had one investor in Victorville basically build the same size house on a very large lot. So now she has basically a duplex.
Wow.
Yeah, really interesting. So the financing world, are you seeing the finance? How is financing world looking, especially mixed when you have a stick built and a manufactured? Is that a problem?
Yep. It can be. Yeah. And primarily it gets back to just being able to fund the loan based on comps.
Yep.
The biggest problem you run into if you put a HUD manufactured ADU on a property with a site or a stick built home, then the appraiser, it's up to him, the ball's on his court.
Yep.
How does he appraise the HUD manufactured? If there's not another HUD manufactured within a reasonable distance from the subject ADU, then sometimes they're left having to go to the nearest mobile home park. It could be a rent park. It could be a really downtrodden park. We call them derelicts, ones that have been really severely neglected. And you're going to have to pull a comp from that. You just spent $200,000 putting an ADU on your property, and now you're going to get a comp from a mobile home park where it may only come out at $50,000.
So there's those
issues, but they're becoming more sophisticated by and large. That's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is that they are slowly kind of leaning more towards allowing them and not necessarily having to always go to the next mobile home on the block, maybe starting to, you know, look at them more as an acceptable and viable addition to the property that they can count as additional square footage. But it's just been a slow process. It's not, and it's very jurisdictional. So it just depends on, you know, how it pretty much impacts the neighborhood you're working in.
Wow. Well, I suspected this was going to happen, a little bit too ambitious of two shows, but that's okay. If you go to crestbackyardhomes.com is where you'll find out more about John. He's got an ADU guide. It's a very handy, very easy to read booklet, about 15 pages, if you're interested. And if they wanted to give you a call, what's the best way to reach you?
760-815-6977.
Awesome.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.